And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Forum Club, the weekly Lakers podcast from The Athletic. I'm Bill Oram, joined as always by Jovan Buha. Jovan, how are we doing today?
I didn't get much sleep last night, but otherwise I'm doing well.
So for our listeners, Jovan was not up all night on some late night like gaming rampage. Was writing about the Lakers' latest loss, and we've had a lot of these. We've had a lot of these, you know, kind of inflection points. I guess I almost said crisis, but we'll just say stick with inflection points this season. And the latest was a loss to the Indiana Pacers. Not just a loss to a bad team. The Pacers entered the night having lost 10 of 11, but a night that felt like the sands were sort of shifting underneath the Lakers. We know that Frank Vogel has been on the hot seat. Sam Amick and I reported earlier this week that he was as close to being fired after the Denver game that they lost by 37 points as at any point this season. And then two games later, you get Frank Vogel benching Russell Westbrook down the stretch, which I think most of us, you know, who've followed this team closely have wondered if it might happen at some point. And it did, but not until Frank is, you know, in the eyes of some, already with one foot, you know, on the banana peel, basically. So, Jovan, do you look at the Russell Westbrook benching as, an act of defiance against the front office that gave Frank this roster and is now potentially looking to hold him accountable for its inability to perform?
No, only because there was the ESPN report that, Frank had the permission of the front office to bench Russ. And I found that very surprising based on conversations I've had with people around the team. I think it's no secret that the Lakers have explored trading Russell Westbrook in recent weeks and have been open to that possibility. So I guess kind of, evaluating that, you would assume that if they're looking to move him, potentially there is, they are kind of admitting they made a mistake or have some buyer's remorse with kind of the decision they made this offseason. So I guess at first I did think it was an act of defiance. I guess that reporting did change my perspective on that. But what it revealed to me was Frank Vogel has towed the company line all season. And, on paper, we know the types of players that Frank Vogel likes. He has kind of admitted at times that like he doesn't love not having a bunch of good perimeter defenders like he's had the past two seasons, and this isn't maybe the best fit stylistically with this roster, but he has always praised Russell Westbrook, even in those games when he's had 9, 10, 11 turnovers, where he's had the 5 for 24 shooting nights. Frank Vogel has continued to say, Russ is a superstar, he's closed games with him, and he's defended him to some extent. And this was, to me, rather telling that with his job potentially on the line and his back against the wall, he resorted to benching Russell Westbrook and really just saying, whether he had permission or not, he kind of just said, screw it, I'm going down with the five guys I think can help me win this game. And Russell Westbrook was not one of them. And you saw with Russ leaving the bench early to go back to the locker room, with him reportedly dressing quickly and leaving the locker room, before the team meeting post game, and then also him not speaking to reporters for the second time in I don't know how many games now. It's been a few games. Like, this situation is not going well, and Russ is clearly not accepting, as Melo has kind of talked about, this transition out of superstardom, and he's not accepted that he is, barely hanging on to relevancy in terms of being like an all-star level guy. And I don't know where the Lakers go from here. Cause I think had Frank been fired last night or this morning, you know, you kind of have, okay, you have the new coach, maybe he tries to repair the situation with Russ, but as long as Frank's still there, I don't think this is something you just throw under, you know, it's not water under the bridge where Russ is just like cool with this. I think Russ is legitimately upset, and Frank, you know, Frank is either gonna have to do some damage control, or it's just gonna be, it is what it is. And Russ is, because it's now three straight games where Russ has not hit the 30 minute mark, and one of those was the Denver blowout, but he, you know, against Utah and Indy with Frank coaching for his, you know, job, he has been playing Russell Westbrook fewer and fewer minutes and not playing him as much in the fourth as you'd expect. So I think we all get it, and we think if it was merit-based, that would be the case. But we also know in the NBA, you know, superstars have egos and thorny personalities, and you can lose a player and lose part of a locker room by benching certain guys. And it really is interesting to me, kind of the fallout from all of this, because I don't think this is something that's just going to be swept under the rug. I think this is going to be a thing moving forward.
Well, it's certainly going to be a thing tomorrow night, Friday, in Orlando, when the Lakers try to, you know, get back on the winning side of things in this seesaw season of, you know, barely 500, just under 500, just over 500. You know, that'll continue. But I agree with you that I think the big thing is whether it's an act of defiance against the front office or not. I continue to think it is. I do think that there is, the more telling thing is that Frank Vogel is ready to start conceding that, you know, a lot of the stuff he's been saying about Russell Westbrook throughout the course of the year has been, you know, untrue. You know, you can't say that he, you know, impacts winning in ways that you can't see if you're not willing to put him out there when you need to win the game. I mean, he came out of a close game. You know, the Lakers were, you know, they were bleeding, obviously. Caris LeVert was going off on him. But, you know, the idea that the guy you're paying $44 million isn't one of the five guys you trust the most to beat the Indiana Pacers is problematic. And obviously that's going to be a hit to Russ's pride. I don't know where they go from here. I mean, the first question I'm going to have for Frank Vogel when we're in Orlando is, how did Russ respond? Have you spoken to Russ? And, you know, I mean, do you expect him to be a part of closing lineups going forward? And I'm sure everything he'll say will be, we talked about it. He's great. You know, he's a team player. And, you know, those things will be assessed, you know, as, you know, on a nightly basis, but, you know, he's one of our top players and I expect him to be out there to close games. Okay, fine. But the proof is going to be in the pudding. We're going to see it going forward. And we're going to see it on this road trip, Jovan, because the Lakers are going to be tested. And they're going to be tested without Anthony Davis. Now, you know, there've been reports that Anthony Davis could be back on the road trip. You know, I think there was one that said it could be as early as Sunday against Miami. That feels early to me, but even if that happens, I mean, that would obviously be a huge momentum swing for the Lakers. But even with those three guys all healthy, the Lakers have struggled against good teams. So you go Orlando, bad team, but you go Miami, very good team. Brooklyn, very good team playing without Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving because it's in Brooklyn. And then you go to Philly, Charlotte, and Atlanta. Those are all losable games, regardless of who's on the floor for the Lakers. I could see them losing, you know, all five of those. They probably won't lose all five, but this could be a 2-4 road trip. It could be a 3-3 road trip. And frankly, a 3-3 road trip would probably be the best case scenario. Now, that's probably going to come back to bite me because they're going to go 5-1.
They
and
win
one,
four games. Yeah.
Like, I mean, I have a hard time seeing them doing better than 3-3. Maybe that, you know, stops the bleeding again for a little while. But, you know, 3-3, you come back and you're, you know, what, 51 games into the season, and you're still one game below 500. And, you know, kind of, you know, in the muck of, you know, eighth, ninth in the West. And that's not, you know, that's not good enough. And by the way, that's going to be right up into the trade deadline. And we know the Lakers aren't going to have much to work with at the trade deadline. You know, anything they do is going to be around the margins. And, you know, that's kind of when you start thinking again, like, you know, I don't really see them firing Frank on the road trip. You know, you don't see that very often in the NBA. Seems unlikely, but it could happen, obviously, with a couple of bad losses. And then, you know, is it after the road trip? Is it the All-Star break? And this has been created, you know, by the Lakers, by the Lakers' indecisiveness, frankly, by you know, hemming and hawing on whether or not, you know, they want to fire Frank and it getting out. You know, we had the story on Monday night about him nearly being fired after the Denver game, and we're told that, you know, he was being evaluated on a game by game basis. Well, what that creates is now a game by game question. Is he still the coach? And that loss to Indiana really opened up that line of questioning again. And, you know, I was told in really no uncertain terms that that was not part of the post game discourse whatsoever. So it does seem like the Lakers kind of, I don't want to say that the Utah game saved Frank's job, but I do think that that was the game that they felt like they would have had to act. And so now there is like kind of this additional lease on life because of the timing, because of the discourse around Frank. Like, you know, nobody is out there saying, yeah, the Lakers should get rid of Frank Vogel. Not just because he's not the problem. I think we all agree he's not the problem, but also what good is it going to do, you know, to fire, you know, him and then have David Fizdale or Phil Handy, Mike Penberthy, if you're a real conspiracy theorist, Kurt Rambis, you know, take over the head job. I mean, do you see any of those guys like being the answer, not just for the rest of this season, but for next year? You know, with Jason Kidd as an assistant coach the last couple of years, if Frank Vogel got fired, like, you kind of would have expected Jason Kidd to not just come in as the interim, but to be given a multi-year contract and to be the new coach of the Lakers. They don't have anybody like that. And the idea that, you know, they're going to suddenly, you know, catch lightning in a bottle and win a championship with, you know, an interim head coach just doesn't feel very realistic.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I think at this point we just have to accept that this team isn't very good and reframe our expectations. And I know that, you know, maybe they're not going to accept that and they're going to continue to view this season in a championship context, because you expect with LeBron James and Anthony Davis and even with Russell Westbrook, but even taking him out of the equation for a second, like, that foundation should be enough to contend. But I mean, how many times have we had this conversation on this podcast, and how many times have I said we've had this conversation on this podcast where it's like one step forward, two steps back? And it's been all season where you follow up the Utah win, which was arguably the one of the season. You actually beat a good,
you know what,
team.
That started, the butt is off the rose on that one. Utah has lost six of their last seven games, and they got beat by Houston at home last night. So, I mean, like, yes.
But in the context of the Lakers season, I think it's, there's only a few games to really pick from, but like, okay, that game versus like Miami or versus Memphis or like the Charlotte, like there's only so many games you can, like the Austin Reeves game, right? But it was the Lakers' first win against a team above 500 in over a month. Their previous win against a 500 team was December 15th in Dallas, that Austin Reeves game. They had not been an above 500 team in over a month. They finally beat Utah. And even if it wasn't the win of the season, it was a feel good win. It was, they actually beat a decent team. They potentially saved Frank's job. And there was like, okay, we closed against a solid team. And guess what? You followed up 48 hours later with arguably your worst loss of the season. And you know, I would put it up there. You know, Indiana, as you were texting me all these different numbers from it, like they hadn't won a road game since November. I think they'd lost eight straight road games, and they are just not a good team. They're 10, you know, over 10 games under 500. And for them to come in and win, not just win the game, but win the game in the fashion that they did, where the Lakers were in control of the game for most of the game, and then Caris LeVert just torched them for 22 points in the fourth. And really, Lakers had no answer for him. Like, that was just, it was embarrassing. And you had Russ leave early. You had the fans booing. You had fans leaving early. Like, it was just not a good, you know, it was just an awful loss. And I think at this point, like, I know I said it last podcast that I'm losing optimism. Like, it's really hard to have any optimism right now. And I also think, though, the one caveat I'll throw in is, like, I also just think this team is not good without Anthony Davis. And you know, I think we need to maybe reframe those expectations where, like, without Anthony Davis, maybe this is like a 30-win team. Like, right? Like, I don't know. You know, like, it's just they're not very good. So maybe AD returning changes some of those things. But I'm fascinated by the Russ situation. I'm fascinated by Frank's future and just sort of where this team goes from here, because it feels like if they're not broken yet, they're close to being broken. And I don't know how you pick up the pieces.
Yeah, I mean, I think if they don't figure things out or start winning when Anthony Davis comes back, that's when it does start to feel just like a totally lost season, you know, and maybe. Then maybe it becomes a team that, you know, starts having phantom injuries, or, you know, LeBron's abdomen flares up again and guys start getting shut down. You know, that would be the kind of natural progression of this season if they just can't figure it out with Russ, LeBron, and AD all healthy. But that speaks to such a bit larger problems, because you still have Russell Westbrook under contract for next year, and he is not a guy who you're going to have an easy time trading. And so I don't really see a scenario where, I don't know. The Lakers just have to figure out a way to be better. There's such urgency to it. Otherwise, I feel like the shoe has to drop in some way, you know, and not just on the coaching staff. If this team doesn't make the playoffs or finishes eighth in the West and loses in the first round, I feel like there has to be some accountability for that, whether it's Rob Pelinka, whether it's, you know, ownership. I mean, you can't have a championship team with LeBron James in 2020 and Anthony Davis, and then the next 2 years fail to advance in the playoffs or fail to get, you know, even close to those heights again. It's just a failure if that's what happens. And that's where it seems to be heading right now. And Frank Vogel, I mean, we could talk about Frank's like real future, you know, whether it's, you know, this season or next season. I would say, you know, if Frank doesn't get fired in this season, I have a hard time seeing him coming back as the coach again next year. And the reason would be, you know, he's only got 1 year left on his contract after this year. That's the tepid extension they gave him last year. Frank Vogel should not, you know, agree to coach the Lakers again next year with anything less than a multi-year extension. You know, I mean, the what he's been put through this year, just on a human level, is frankly beneath, you know, what he's shown he is, his value as a coach in the NBA. And the idea that, you know, he'd go into this summer and take another 1 year extension and then go get put through the same ringer again, like, shouldn't happen. So even if the Lakers don't outright fire him at the end of this year, I would not be surprised at all to see some sort of, you know, parting of the ways if they're not willing to commit to him long term. And obviously what we've seen in recent days and kind of throughout this season shows a real lack of, like, you know, commitment to Frank. So, you know, whether he's fired now or later, it does seem like this is not going to be a long-term marriage. So it's really just a matter of, can they surprise us? Because you said earlier, at some point we need to just accept that this isn't a very good team. And we're so close to it, Jovan, that, like, and you know, we're always listening to what the players say, and like what the players say often drives our coverage. And, you know, you listen to Carmelo Anthony and he's like, we're going to figure this out. Like, just wait, we're going to figure this out. You know, LeBron says similar things. You know, Russ says
similar things.
He was saying
that at game 15.
And, well, for sure. But, like, my point is, like, they should believe in themselves. They should have confidence. You know, I mean, what else are they going to say? But, like, sure, that doesn't mean it's true. That doesn't mean that they're actually, you know, going to be there, you know, in June or even May. This, with the players who are on this team, you might have some like eighth seed caliber teams who are like, you know, yeah, we realize, you know, we're a team on the rise. You know, we know the expectations are different, but like the Lakers expectations are single note to win the game, or to win the championship this year. And if that doesn't happen, it's a failure. Or at least if you don't get to the finals, or if you don't put yourself in a position where a championship is a realistic goal, that's it. So I just think that is the metric by which everyone's going to be judged.
Yeah, and look, I think if we want to try to be optimistic, really looking at the West, I don't see, barring some incredible collapse from this team, which I'm not going to rule out at this point, like they're going to be in the play-in at worst. They're probably going to be in that, you know, again, in the worst case scenario, like 8 or 9 seed. I don't really see them dropping much lower than they're currently at. So I think like you have a shot, and you're probably favored in your play-in game. in both of them, no matter kind of who's in that 7-10 mix. And then you're probably entering a first round series with Golden State or Phoenix, and you can't feel great about that, especially starting that, you know, not having home court advantage, and you're looking at a situation where you probably have to go something like, you know, might be like Phoenix, Utah, you know, Golden State all on the road to get to the finals. So I think the one thing, you know, the one source of optimism for me is like, this team is, they're not going to miss the play-in. They're going to have a shot. And I still think in a 48-minute, you know, play-in situation or a 7-game series facing LeBron James and Anthony Davis, assuming they're both healthy, is going to be difficult. And there's always the chance that those two guys are the two best players in any series, in any game, and that gives the Lakers a shot. But just judging what we've actually seen, and not hypotheticals and not theoreticals, like this team just has not been very good or very consistent. And I think for me, it's more the consistency, because we have seen some good moments and those moments that maybe would kind of give you some confidence in what they ultimately could do. But it's followed up with, go back and look at their contenders for best win of the season. How many of those are followed up with a loss or a disappointing situation where maybe they went to crunch time with a team they shouldn't have gone to crunch time with? Like, it's just night to night, you have no consistency with this group. I do wonder if, like, I just wrote about, I think small ball is the way to go moving forward. Obviously, it's tough to do without Anthony Davis, but once AD's back, I think you go all in on AD, LeBron, Stanley Johnson. Those are three centers. And the rest of it is going to be, you know, Melo, Ariza, and the guards. And, you know, no more Dwight, no more DeAndre, you know, no Kent Bazemore, probably no Wayne Ellington, and everybody else is in the rotation, and we're just going small and fast. And you're going to give up some stuff defensively, but we've seen how good this team could be in transition. We've seen how good with the small ball, you know, getting to the rim, running pick and rolls and stuff, like they can be effective. And they did that against Utah and Rudy Gobert, and that's a particular weakness for Utah. So maybe that's just a matchup thing. But I do think like that is the way moving forward. But I don't know. I mean, this has just been a crazy week, and there's just so much that we still don't know and are going to find out in the next 24 hours, 48, 72 hours. I do think it's funny that Frank is playing Indiana and Orlando, his two former teams, to kind of coach for his.
I said on the Dan Patrick show, for him, he's got to be dying to get through this stretch, because to him, like, these games must feel like the ghosts of firings past. Like, it's just, I mean, the timing is very poetic. And purely hypothetically, if the Lakers lost to Orlando and he got fired in Orlando, it would be very, very bitterly poetic that, you know, it was the two teams, it was losing to the two teams that previously fired him that ultimately did him in. To your point about Dwight, I think Dwight has a role on this team. I don't think DeAndre does. But I think, again, it's like, it's a change of pace. You know, it's like, it's bringing the knuckleballer in out of the bullpen, in certain matchups. I mean, you know, when they play Joel Embiid next week, I think you got to have, you know, Dwight Howard out there. You know, maybe it's 15, 18 minutes, maybe it's less, depending on how effective your small ball lineups are. But, you know, that's a weapon you need to have. But I think the Lakers are currently built, and they've found enough success going small that they only need one true center on the roster. Or certainly, you know, only one center in the rotation. DeAndre Jordan doesn't need to be on this team. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out as, you know, we get to the trade deadline, past the trade deadline, if the Lakers end up just buying out some of these guys who have not contributed this year to clear up, you know, space on the buyout market. It just doesn't make sense to have, you know, 35-year-old, former stars as end of bench guys. You know, they aren't going to contribute when they come in anyway. So, you know, DeAndre, Kent Bazemore, you know, Wayne Ellington, you know, I think all could be candidates to get, you know, to get dumped one way or another. And by the way, like, I mean, what have you thought of Trevor Ariza? Like, he had a couple good games when he first came in.
He's been awful.
But like, there hasn't been, you know, from how the Lakers viewed him when they signed him in the summer. You know, the plan was, and we reported this in September, the working plan going into training camp was Lakers were going to go small, so to speak, with Anthony Davis at center. And outside of the big three, it was going to be Ariza and Wayne Ellington. Well, Ariza has barely played, but hasn't been, you know, has looked like a shell of his former self when he's played. And Wayne Ellington has not really contributed in a meaningful way, and he's not in the rotation. So, you know, things have really, really changed, you know, from what the Lakers thought they were working with in terms of the level to which all those minimum guys performed. And, you know, I wrote a story earlier this season, actually after Austin Reeves hit that game winner in Dallas, kind of giving some credit to the Lakers development operation and their G League team. You know, Joey Buss, who obviously is a member of the Buss family, one of the sons of Dr. Jerry Buss, you know, potentially, you know, in position to run the Lakers one day, runs their G League team. And, you know, we were at the time, you know, wrote a story about Austin Reeves and kind of the wonder of him coming in and being able to contribute. But I mean, the fact that the Lakers are relying so heavily, not just on Austin Reeves, but also Stanley Johnson, who is a 25-year-old journeyman at this point, but who did start the year with the South Bay Lakers. He's coming in and playing super meaningful minutes. You know, I think you can give him you could give him the game ball from the Jazz win. Austin Reeves, you know, has been huge, has been part of those closing lineups. And then also Avery Bradley, who was somebody the Lakers passed on in the offseason and was not part of the original plans, and I don't think would be on this team if not for the injuries in the preseason to all their guards. I mean, keep in mind, it's not just that, oh, they needed a 15th guy and Avery Bradley became available. It was that there were preseason injuries to Talen Horton-Tucker, Malik Monk, Wayne Ellington, and Kendrick Nunn, who's still out. They needed bodies. And that was kind of what Avery Bradley was seen as when they picked him up off waivers after he didn't make the team in Golden State. He was a body to kind of get through, you know, the first couple weeks of the season. And if you remember opening night, Jovan, I know it was a long time ago, but do you remember that Avery Bradley did not play until the fourth quarter when the Lakers were getting their butts kicked and they needed somebody to throw at Steph, and then Avery Bradley nearly brought them back and they almost won the game. So that is these are the guys who've kind of kept the Lakers afloat this year. I mean, obviously LeBron's doing all the heavy lifting, but when you're talking about role players, I mean, three of their most valuable role players, you know, maybe three of their most four valuable role players, if you want to include Carmelo, have been guys who weren't supposed to be here. Which really just is which really reflects poorly on the offseason, on the ability to build a team. And you know, not to turn this fully into a referendum on Rob Pelinka, but go back to last year. Not only did he tear down a championship team to build something that ultimately didn't work, but, you know, one of the biggest moves of that offseason was, you know, getting rid of JaVale McGee and letting Dwight go, so you get Montrezl Harrell and Marc Gasol. Well, you pivot midseason and basically send Marc Gasol to the end of the bench for Andre Drummond, who doesn't work out. And then, you know, ultimately, Montrezl Harrell's not a part of the solution either. So that's really two ineffective off seasons by management coming off the heels of when you have the most appealing destination in the NBA, because not only is it Los Angeles with LeBron James and a chance to win, you have a blueprint showing that you can win because you just did it. So it's like, I've used this analogy, but it's like getting born on third base. It's like being born on third base and getting thrown out at second. Like, how do you move backwards like this? It's really baffling. And you know, sorry, I was really trying to turn this into like a positive moment on like some of these stuff, like on Reeves and Johnson and Bradley. But the fact that those are the guys who are bailing the Lakers out, and not Ellington, not Ariza, not, you know, Dwight or DeAndre, you know, not Kent Bazemore, you know, those are the guys who they were signing on the first couple days of free agency, and they just haven't panned out.
I think Malik Monk also deserves a shout out.
For sure. Yeah. Sorry, that's an oversight.
I guess to your point, like, I think it's interesting. Frank changed the rotation a couple games ago where he moved Stanley and Malik to the bench, and he's created, we know they have gone smaller with those second units. Lineups with LeBron at the five, and it tends to be LeBron with athletes or LeBron with shooters, and kind of that's the more energetic up-tempo lineup, and they couldn't really do that as much with so many guys in and out of the lineup. But now we've seen, you know, Trevor starting, Dwight's been starting, Avery So they're going a little more defensive-minded and more veteran-heavy, and then bringing off the bench Stanley, Austin, Malik, Talen, and kind of going younger. But I do wonder if it just comes down to a point where, I don't know if it's fully. I don't think you can play fully small ball with the current guys available. I just think you need Anthony Davis back, and that's sure. when you can kind of fully unlock that. But I do think like Trevor Ariza does not look like a rotation player to me right now. Avery Bradley, I think, has had productive moments. If anything, I think he's kind of overachieved offensively and underachieved defensively. And like, he's out there for his defense, but he's actually had some timely offensive contributions. I mean, he hit the three against the Jazz, and like he has shot the three well. He's made timely cuts. I think he's had some productive offensive moments that have maybe, in my opinion, at least covered up for a little bit of him being overrated defensively. But I think his role is probably a little bit too big for what, he's to me more of a 12 to 15 minute a night guy than a 25 to 30 minute a night guy. But I think you might just have to lean more into the young guys and the energy. And it's like, why not throw Stanley Johnson and Austin Reaves out there for 30, 32 minutes and bump those guys up a little bit. Even Taylor, I mean, when Taylor's playing well, I think he obviously is productive. You're going to get Kendrick back at some point, maybe in the future. But like, I just think it is, and we've seen it with DeAndre and Wayne are out of the rotation. Kent's out of the rotation. Like they have admitted some of these guys just were bad signings who shouldn't be playing. But I even think like the Trevor starting over Stanley, like doesn't really make sense to me when Trevor can't, like, I mean, he's okay defensively, but he has obviously lost a couple steps. But offensively, all he's doing out there is taking threes and missing wide open threes. And like, he had the hot start for a couple games, but since then, I think he's shooting something like 25% on threes over his last yeah. seven games. So he's not been effective, and he is a body, and they need that size and defense in theory. But I do wonder if we're getting to a point where Frank really is, again, benching Russ was a big decision, and it was kind of like screw politics. I'm going with what's going to work, and I think there might need to be more changes where maybe it's a 7 or 8 man rotation, and you're playing guys a little bit more than you're comfortable with. But you need to start winning games, because if you don't, like the worst thing for the Lakers, I think, is being in the play-in, right? Like you don't want to be matched up with Golden State or Phoenix in round one. You're gonna lose in like 5 games. So if you can get to that 5 or 6 seed and give yourself a shot to at least make the second round, I think that's probably the upside at this point, for the season. So
not good enough, Lakers, Jovan. Like, I've said it before.
It's not. No, it's
like,
not.
You're right. I mean, they have to play out the season, and like you got to get as far as you can. But if we are accepting, and I probably said this like every time we've recorded this podcast since probably December, but If we are acknowledging that the ceiling for this team is the second round of the playoffs, then the season has been a failure. We can already deem it a failure.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I agree. It is. I still think like there is some like best case scenario where they make some crazy run, but that, I mean, it feels like the rotation has to be much different. They probably have to make a move, and they have to have great health moving forward. And none of those three things are assured. Right. I mean, Russ has to kind of buy into potentially this new role of like, hey, you're not going to close every game if you're not playing well. And last night it was one of his worst games of the season. He was 5 for 17. He had 2 rebounds, 3 assists, only 1 turnover. But when you're not affecting the game in other ways, I mean, what good is that? He had a really bizarre shooting night where he was 4 for 6 on threes, but 2 of 11 inside the arc. And his finishing continues to be a problem. His defense to me is arguably been the worst thing of all of, Russ's flaws, the shooting, the decision-making, the turnovers. I think his defense might be the worst of all and the most destructive, where, pairing him with Carmelo Anthony, for example, like early in the season, him, Melo and Monk played a lot, and those lineups just got shredded defensively. And a large part of that is because Russ is a minus defender. And there's this kind of misconception of, oh, well, he's got the physical tools and he's athletic, and he was a defensive player of the year in the Pac-10 back then. And like, yeah, that was over a decade ago. This version of Russ is not a good defender.
I mean, my God, if we're talking about the 2007 Pac-10 defensive player of the year to in defense of Russell Westbrook, then I quit.
There are like, people who have brought it up.
I mean, listen, stop going to Russell Westbrook's like grandma for your analysis, if that's where we're at. Jovan, I did want to ask you before we get out of here, because we've got a couple airplanes to get on and head east here. But is there any way? I mean, early in the year, there were scouts, and I know one told Sam Amick, our colleague Sam Amick, that you know Russ's best use with this Lakers team would be to come off the bench, and it was early in the year. That's ludicrous. That obviously hasn't happened, but could being benched at the end of the fourth quarter be a gateway to a gradual reimagining of Russell Westbrook's role on this team, potentially including coming off the bench?
No. Well, I guess I have a nuanced answer insofar as I think what's right and what's going to happen are two totally different things. I do think Russ, whether it's just a reduction in minutes or him coming off the bench, I do think that that would benefit the Lakers. I think that at this point in his career and just with the way he's played this season, something more in like a 24 to 26 minute a night role is probably best. And maybe just because of who he is and where he probably thinks his game is at currently, you do need to keep him in the starting lineup to just not lose him entirely. But I do think reducing his minutes, potentially him not closing certain matchups, if honestly not closing most matchups, because I think he's more of a liability at the end of games than anything, that's probably the way to go. And it appears, based on this latest report, that like maybe the Lakers are, and I don't know if that's just them doing damage control themselves of saying like, no, you know, we were okay with this, to kind of make it look better, yeah, than whatever. But I don't know. Like, if Russ had a different temperament, I would say yes. But this is, you know, people have been comparing it to Allen Iverson all season. But I even think Russ is a little more temperamental than Iverson, right? And I think a little more outspoken and confrontational than Iverson was. So I don't think. There's no indication, you know, based on anything Russ has said to us all season, on and off the record, there's no indication to me that he has accepted that he is no longer an all-star, no longer an all-NBA guy, that he's no longer the third superstar in a big three. Like, he views himself in that light. And I think there's some positive to that, right? You got to have that confidence. But I think we're kind of seeing the potential downside here where, even though it's probably better for the team to reduce his role, I don't think he's on board with it. And you know, a guy who's on board with it does not leave the bench the manner in which he left the bench. He does not leave the locker room. He does not refuse to talk to the media. Like, you know, and maybe he's in the process of accepting it and he's going to come out next game and maybe have a smaller role and then talk to us, you know, talk to the media afterward and go into more detail about accepting a new role. But he's been complaining for weeks now about, I don't know what my role is and it changes night to night and where, you know, I have the ball, I don't have the ball, I'm in the dunker spot, I'm this and that. Like, he's clearly not been happy with his role. I'm sure, you know, for both sides, honestly, they'd probably go back and do this differently. And Russ would not be in LA and they wouldn't have traded for him and he wouldn't have wanted to be there. And I'm sure both parties would probably admit that with truth serum, but, yeah, I mean, I guess to go back to your question or to kind of cap it, like, I don't see. I mean, I would be look. I was shocked that they benched him to begin with, but I would be shocked if he accepted a bench role. And maybe they force it on him, but Russ does not seem like a guy who just accepts those terms. Because look at every other situation he's been in. The team has had to bend to Russ and not the other way around. But maybe this is the first situation where he has to bend.
It's a great framing of the issue and something we're going to keep talking about going forward. Jovan, thanks for breaking that down. As always, our listeners benefit from your insight, your basketball insight, your knowledge, and also your hair. I mean, our listeners don't know that they benefit from your hair, but you have such great hair that it gives you confidence. And that confidence really fuels everything you do. Sort of like Russell Westbrook, but in your case, it is earned confidence, and you brought that today. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning in for an episode of The Forum Club. We're here every week talking Lakers, usually talking Russ, currently talking Frank Vogel. Continue to read our coverage on The Athletic. Lots of good stuff there. Jovan with a fire take on the Lakers' loss to Indiana. And we'll, of course, have everything from this upcoming six-game road trip. We'll be there. So follow our coverage, and you can be there, too. Thank you very much for listening.